Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention, I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
It's mess!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It is a big day in the Independent Republic. Here in the UK, all the political parties have until 4pm to select their candidates for the election on December the 12th. Will there be any last-minute deals done? We will bring all that to you right here, of course, on Talk Radio. Over in America, the Democrats will hold day two of their impeachment inquiry against President Donald Trump, which he has called a witch hunt, and the White House press secretary has called a colossal waste of taxpayer time and money. Today, we have a special guest to give his views of both that historic impeachment process in Washington and the election battleground here, which is starting to heat up. That man is the man who invented populist politics. He is the political strategist who is responsible for keeping Donald Trump in the race in 2016 when everyone else was urging him to quit. He was the chief executive officer of the Trump presidential campaign and chief strategist in the Trump White House. He's been called the great manipulator by Time magazine, who asked in 2017 if he was the second most powerful man in the world. That man is Steve Bannon, and he joins us this morning on the Independent Republic exclusively. You will not want to miss a minute of it. 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll also be talking immigration, one of the many big issues of the campaign so far. Priti Patel is warning that Labour's policies would result in an increase of 840,000 more people coming into this country, while the Tories are vowing to reduce immigration overall with a points-based system. Who are you supposed to believe in this conversation? And all of this comes as we discover that Britain has more illegal immigrants than any other country in the European Union. There could be as many as 1.2 million. Is anyone really surprised? 0344 499 1000. Oh, Donald Tusk has been interfering in the election campaign as well. Is anyone complaining about that? No, I didn't think so. 0344 499 1000 is the number. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, immigration has always been a massive political battleground between the Tory party and the Labour party. We've got 1.2 million illegal immigrants, it is thought now, in this country, many of whom, probably most of whom, would have come here under Tory governments and under Tory immigration rules. So, if there are that many illegal immigrants coming here and more coming here than there are in any other part of the EU, in any other country of the EU, then clearly something isn't working very well in the immigration system. The point system which they operate in Australia is apparently going to be adopted by Priti Patel and this particular Tory party if they get re-elected to government. The Labour Party are not quite so sure what their policy is going to be on freedom of movement. That all seems to be a bit up in the air, depending, of course, on whether they get in and whether they decide to give us all a second referendum. Let's talk to John Rentoul to try and make sense of it all. John, a very good morning to you.
Good morning, Mike.
Well, I mean, the election process is well underway. The sort of the claims and the statements and the I don't want to say lies, but things that are being said which may turn out not to be.
We don't use that kind of language.
No, we don't. We certainly don't. Yeah. But this immigration conversation has taken a bit of an interesting turn, whereby Priti Patel is claiming that the Labour Party's policies would mean an extra 840,000 people coming here. I'm not quite sure how she works that out.
No, and the Conservative press release, which I've just read, in order to prepare myself properly for coming on your excellent programme,
yes,
does not explain the basis for that 840,000 figure. But what it does is it says that Labour wants to extend free movement of people beyond not just wants to keep it for the European Union, but it wants to extend it beyond that to the rest of the world. And Labour, of course, have put out a statement saying no, we don't. That's not what the policy that was passed at our party conference actually said. Now, so I've even for service to your listeners, Mike, I've even read the Labour Party motion that was carried at the party conference in October.
Yeah.
And it's clear and it's true. It is completely ambiguous as to what it means. It does talk about extending free movement, but you know, the Labour press operation is saying that just means extending the rights of free movement to giving EU citizens more rights. It doesn't mean extending it beyond Europe. But in that case, why pass such a badly worded motion?
Well, quite. And I suppose inevitably we can't really work out what Labour Party policy would be on immigration, depending on what happens vis-a-vis one, the election result, and two, a second referendum if they were to get into power.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, I mean, Labour Party's policy is going to be to have this second referendum. And everybody knows that the Labour Party's position in that referendum is going to be to campaign to remain. And if we remain in the EU, then we keep free movement. And so, in essence, you know, Labour's immigration policy is not to change free movement, which is the most important part of it, I suppose. Although, you know, actually, we get more net immigration from outside the EU, but that's not something that we would expect a Labour government to take a particularly hard line on. And that's the difference between the two parties. I mean, Priti Patel, when she's asked, will say that she wants immigration to be lower, whereas Jeremy Corbyn, if he's asked that same question, won't give a straight answer.
And the trouble with the Tory party's promises on immigration in the past is that they've always said they want immigration to be lower, but it doesn't always work out that then that's what happens.
No, absolutely. I mean, Theresa May stuck to that figure of trying to get net immigration down below 100,000. And the point is, she didn't even manage to achieve that for net immigration from outside the EU, which is the one bit that she could control as Home Secretary and then as Prime Minister. I mean, David Cameron didn't seem to care very much that he was promising to get net immigration down to tens of thousands and had no prospect of reaching that figure. He just sort of said that's Theresa May's problem.
Yeah, and also we know from the illegal immigration figures that at least 1,000 people have travelled here from the French coast, basically on these dirigible boats which have come in to various beaches and points across the UK. All of those people, once they've got here, have stayed here.
That's right. I mean, and that terrible tragedy in Essex, with those 39 people dead in a truck, did suggest that, you know, that's a fairly large-scale operation of illegal immigration that's going on. I mean, and nobody knows how many got in and didn't die. So, you know, it's clearly a very big problem. But it all, I mean, in an election campaign, it all comes down to a very simple choice, doesn't it? I mean, because everyone just assumes that the Conservatives will try a bit harder than a Labour government would to try and get control of the issue. Jeremy Corbyn's got a big task on his hand to persuade us that he would actually administer the immigration system more efficiently than a Tory government would.
And this is, again, leading us into that same kind of cul-de-sac of doubt, really, because he can't possibly lay out what his manifesto is. I understand they're going to be working on their manifesto and releasing it sometime over the weekend in conjunction with trade unions and everybody else that has to be part of the process. But it's going to be very difficult for them to make policy without knowing whether we're going to be in the EU or not, aren't they? Isn't it?
Well, except that, I mean, I don't think there's any doubt as to what the Labour Party's official position on that will be when the time comes. I mean, I think, you know, the party members are all Remain, 80% Remainers. I mean, you do have some powerful voices at the top. You've got Len McCluskey, who's, I think he's in Guardian today, saying that he, you know, he thinks we should leave the EU and end free movement.
Yes.
So there is a dispute in the Labour Party, but I mean, I think overall, I think there's no doubt about which way the Labour Party is leaning on that question. They want to stay in the EU and keep free movement.
Yes, but also it sort of leads to conversations on the doorstep, does it not, if they start talking about immigration in a big way, where people will say, well, what happens if we're still in the EU? Or what happens if we're not? And then they, you know what I mean? They're putting themselves in a situation they don't want to be in.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's, you know, that is the fence that Jeremy Corbyn has chosen to sit on. And, you know, he's trying to fend off Jo Swinson on the other side. I mean, she's very clear about her EU policy. And Jeremy Corbyn wants to try to hold as much of that Remainer vote as he can, while hanging on to some Leave voters in Labour heartlands.
Mm. And I mean, we were talking yesterday about the polls now showing a 14-point lead for the Tories in those 317 seats, which the Brexit Party have said they're not going to fight, basically. By the end of today, we'll have all the kind of candidates in place. Are you expecting there to be any sort of surprises between now and 4 o'clock when all of that happens?
Yes. No, I do think there will be some individual Brexit Party candidates who will fail to put in their nomination papers. Because you know, we've seen Brexit Party candidates standing down in various parts of the country saying they don't want to split the Leave vote, and that was part of the pressure that was on Nigel Farage to do his unilateral pact, as he called it.
Yeah.
And I suspect there'll be more of them. But I mean, Nigel Farage yesterday said he wasn't going to be standing down in Tory target seats that are currently held by Labour. But I just think that in a number of places, I think we'll see the individual candidates taking unilateral action.
Yeah, and given that, rightly or wrongly, immigration was quite a major factor for some people in the referendum in 2016, as far as leaving the European Union was concerned, is it likely to become a big factor, do you think, a big debating point, once we have the TV debates, once we have, the sort of going down to the wire time in the next couple of weeks?
Oh, I think so. I mean, it is one of those issues that the media don't particularly like to talk about, but it is one of the top issues that the people care about if you ask them what are the issues facing the country. Although, to be fair, actually, you ask people what are the issues facing the country and they say Brexit, the NHS and immigration.
Yeah.
But if you ask them what are the issues that matter most to them and their families, immigration drops right down the list. I mean, most people don't think it personally affects them. I mean, I think they get they do worry about the principle of a country that can't control who's coming in and who's not.
Yeah, I mean, I think it seems to me to be an important issue if it's affecting you, i.e. if you're living in one of those cities or towns where it would appear that quite a lot of immigration from one particular place has happened. You know, for example, lots of people came from the Czech Republic and somehow ended up in Peterborough for some reason, not quite sure why. But obviously, if you live in Peterborough, that's an issue for you. If you live in the East End of London, you might be more concerned about immigration coming in from, say, countries outside of the European Union. You know what I mean? So, but if you live in sort of rural Dorset, where really nobody comes there at all from anywhere else other than rural Dorset and London, you know, you probably don't care.
Well, and also I do think that immigration is one of those issues where if you care about it, you've already made up your mind which party to support. And it's usually, you know, if you want tighter restrictions on immigration, then you're more likely to vote Conservative. I mean, why would you vote Labour in that if that was that really mattered to you? So I doubt if it would move large numbers of votes, but it is important to a lot of people, and therefore it probably will come up in the TV debates. You're absolutely right.
Mm. And what about the sort of the nature of the debate so far, as you're seeing it? Because it seems to me, as we've said many times, this is going to be quite an unusual election. It's going to be quite an important election, but it's being operated and run in kind of a strange way, it seems to me. I don't know whether I've just been looking at it for too long or my eyes are starting to glaze over, but you know, this whole kind of campaigning mode seems to be something wrong with it all somehow. I don't know. Well, I can't put my finger on it.
I know what you mean. I mean, there is a sort of slight feeling of a phony war at the moment.
Yeah, it's kind of surreal, isn't it?
Because, you know, we don't have, you know, in the old days, we had a very strict routine. You had a morning press conference from each of the main parties. And the sort of issues that came up in those press conferences would tend to sort of dominate the day of campaigning, whereas it's a bit more sort of unfocused and random now. And I do think Boris Johnson's personality has got quite a lot to do with that. I mean, you know, watching his speech yesterday, I mean, it was very entertaining and all that. And it is unfortunately, I have to admit, it is fun to watch a politician who enjoys using language in such a sort of interesting way. I mean, such a relief after Theresa May. But there wasn't much content there. I mean, you didn't feel that, you know, he was actually getting to grips with the issues or presenting himself as someone who's going to administer the country in a sort of efficient and effective way.
No.
But you were entertained by, you know, him talking about the only sort of hard crouton of fact in the minestrone of muddle that is Labour's Brexit policy. I mean, that sort of stuff is entertaining. There's no question about it.
It is. And I think the pictures of Boris kind of rather gingerly at the helm of an electric taxi driving at about 1 mile an hour, which is probably the reenactment of driving around London, to be fair, at that sort of speed. It just didn't look like... I mean, if you wanted a man, you know, the sort of Margaret Thatcher on a tank image, that wasn't it.
No, that is not it. But, you know, it is a sort of have I got news for you type election.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I think that's
Boris
absolutely right.
He does entertain people. And, you know, the question is to what extent people think that translates into being a good Prime Minister of the country.
Yeah, well, we shall see. John, as ever, thank you very much indeed. John Rentoul there, Chief Political Commentator at The Independent.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham. You know what to do. 0344 499 1000. By 4 o'clock this afternoon, you will find out which candidates are running where, which candidates are standing down, which people are sort of tactically removing themselves from the stramash, be it as it may, whether they be from the Brexit Party, the Lib Dems, the Tories, the Labour Party. There's an awful lot of sort of jiggery-pokery going on, cephalogy-wise, I'd have to say, and I don't find it particularly edifying. Let's talk to James Max, who is, of course, Business Breakfast presenter here at Talk Radio, and he's on every morning, and you can get him up very early in the morning if you so wish. I wonder, James, whether you have ever managed to get something delivered to your home which has ever had something substituted that you didn't want.
I have never had substitute, and hello, Mike. I've never had stuff substituted, but they have sent the wrong things. They've sent broken things. They've sent things that then need to be repaired, and it's quite stressful.
Yeah, I mean, we're not just talking about food deliveries here, because I sort of gave up with one particular supermarket brand because they kept bringing me stuff that was either wrong. The eggs were broken all over it, without really a care in the world for what it was they were giving you. Some of the stuff they were picking was pretty awful. But the final straw was when a guy... I live in a third floor flat above the river. And if you come in from the very ground floor, it's four floors, right? This guy rang me from the floor below mine to say, are you coming down one floor to get your groceries? And I said, well, no, because I've ordered it to be delivered to my door, not to the floor below. And he wouldn't come upstairs. He said, I've already done three floors, that's all I have to do.
Oh.
And I just said, well, you can take them all away again then. And he was quite upset. He's like, well, what do you mean take them away? I was like, I don't want them. Get rid of them. Take them back. I never use them again.
Well, I think this is beginning to expose some of the difficulties that we got with delivery. Because, look, if you go to a shop, you can choose the stuff yourself. And here's the thing, I think, about supermarket shopping particularly. I like to pick the stuff which has got the longest date.
Yeah.
If you're picking fruit and vegetables, as much as the supermarket would like to homogenise them, there is a difference, and some are nicer than other ones, and you can choose. And the other thing is that if you are a larger gentleman or a larger lady, maybe one should follow the mantra that if you can't carry it home, maybe you shouldn't buy it. And I'm not sure it's worked for me particularly. Anybody seen one on the telly recently? It's clearly not working. I just go to the supermarket more often. But I think this is a major problem, though, because we've clogged up our streets having things delivered. We've got people who are... if you haven't got machines picking things, they are going to make mistakes from time to time, and they are going to run out of things because, say, for example, you go to your local supermarket and they've run out of the particular kind of sauce or the spaghetti or the whatever it is that you want to buy. Funnily enough, you'll make a decision and you'll either go without or you'll find something else. You don't really want somebody else to substitute it for you.
Well, exactly right. And I mean, the story that we're looking at today is a couple called Graham and Janice Shaw from Northampton who ordered two crockery sets online. I'm not quite sure why you would order crockery online, because you definitely would want to carry that home, I would have thought, because you'd be worried it would turn up like that scene from Pet Detective, you know, where the guys just kicked it all over the place. But they couldn't get the crockery service, so instead it was substituted for some Play-Doh, which is quite the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
It is sort of ridiculous, but then on the other hand, I'm enjoying the comments online on this one, which is you pay peanuts, you get Play-Doh. Because the thing is, I mean, a whole dinner service or two of them for 76 quid, it's not the greatest.
Well, I'm afraid you're showing your snobbery now, James. I mean, I know we know that you advise wealthy people on how to spend their money, but I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with a cheap and cheerful crockery set, is there?
There is nothing wrong with a cheap and cheerful crockery set, but then on the other hand, if you are expecting somebody to deliver a whole 12-piece dinner set for 76 quid, you know, and the margins on that are so small, are so thin, chances are, guess what, they are going to make mistakes. I mean, there are a lot of people saying, well, why is this even a story, on the basis that the supermarket took away the Play-Doh straight away, they admitted that they made a mistake, they're sending the stuff that the people ordered, and they're sending some kind of gift or other.
So, yeah. Well, you know, the reason, let me explain to anyone who doesn't understand how the news works. It's a story because it's funny, it's a story because it doesn't happen very often, and it's a story that Sainsbury's would probably rather you didn't hear about.
Oh, now, you see, it's that last part, which I'm thoroughly enjoying, because there are plenty of stories about Sainsbury's that they probably wouldn't like us to hear about. But then, look, I think this is inevitably going to happen more and more as we decide that we're getting lazy and we want people to deliver stuff. We've created this world in which we used to go to stores to go and pick things up, and now we want everything delivered, and then we wonder why the traffic is so bad, we wonder why the pollution is bad, we wonder why expenses and costs are going up, and why shops on our high street are disappearing. You know, this is kind of a technological change, and I wonder whether the unintended consequence of this is we're going to have more time for dealing with mistakes that other people make, and we're going to probably have to pay more for our goods and services, even though the internet promised that they were going to be cheaper, because at some point somebody's going to make us realise that it's this last mile of delivery, it's cheaper if you do it yourself rather than they do it for you.
Well, I must admit, I'm glad that you mentioned the clogging up of the roads as well, because that's one of my bugbears that I always say to people. It's all very well talking about, you know, the brilliant efficiency of the internet and how you can now get anything delivered to your house within a day, or sometimes I think now there's an Amazon account you can have where they promise to deliver stuff to you the same day.
They do.
But, I mean, all of these services are using four-wheel delivery systems, generally speaking, big vans or quite big lorries, it must be clogging up the roads. There must be a reason why the congestion is getting worse.
There is. I mean, to some extent, software is beginning to help us with this in the same way that we used to have a postal service, and guess what? You had one, and if you were lucky, you used to have two deliveries of post a day.
Yeah.
And of course, now you don't. So the delivery companies have found a way that they have these circuits that they go on. And the more urban your area, the more that they're doing that circuit every day, you may or may not have something delivered. If you do, they'll stop off for you that day, and it's in the back of their van, boom, off you go. But I think what we've forgotten, though, is the amount of rubbish and packaging that we're creating from this. I don't know whether you've had anything delivered from that lovely shop that Mr. Bezos owns, that is very often a very large box will turn up for a very small item within.
Absolutely.
Or, even worse, because of the way their logistics work, you've ordered three things on the same day thinking they'll all arrive at once. Oh, no. Because they come from different warehouses and everything else, three deliveries, three boxes,
Oh, I know. It is absolutely maddening. And unfortunately, when I get stuff delivered down to Sussex, which is quite a difficult address to find, quite often it doesn't actually arrive. It gets taken somewhere completely different, which has got a similar sounding address, but a completely different postcode.
Well, I've got a couple of bottles of wine which have been delivered to my next-door neighbour but one. He's away at the moment, and they're sort of sat in my hallway. And the amount of times you become a delivery office for your neighbours.
Oh, yeah, well, that's another thing. I won't do that. Sometimes I'll get these guys ringing the doorbell. It used to happen to me more when I was at home during the day more. And they would be like, oh, can you just take this? I'm like, no, I can't take this for somebody else because, one, I very rarely see my neighbours. I don't really know who any of them are. And I'd probably have to knock on his door at about 10 o'clock at night to give it to him. So I'm not doing it. So take it away. Thanks.
Well, exactly. And I think we have ended up with these very strange situations in which the cost of doing this is probably going to come home to roost at some point, that people are going to realise, I hope, that maybe, for example, the idea of actually going to a central delivery place, i.e. your shopping high street, is a good idea. But like everything, sometimes it has to die in order for it to be reinvented. So here we are maligning the loss of our high street resource.
Mm.
Years ago, we used to have these tea shops on the corner of every high street in every corner, and they were called Lion's Tea Shops, and then they went out of fashion. And then somebody came along and they said, oh, well, we'd like a coffee shop. And then, of course, now we have coffee shops on the corner, which do sell cups of tea as well. And they've reinvented it. They delivered it in a different way. They give all the sort of different drinks and ramped it up and turned it into something that we as society and fashion said we wanted. So the high street and various other things will be reinvented, because
yes,
there's no way that all this stuff can be delivered to us. And there's no way that the current model of just whatever you want and have it delivered to your home is sustainable. It just isn't.
No. Funnily enough, I went into the post office yesterday for the first time in many a year. There's one just down the road from the office here.
Wow, you and me both.
Yeah, we've I can't actually remember the last time I was in a post office, because the one in my town in Sussex has been shut down, so it's not there anymore. It was a massive queue. It was quite efficient, but they had a great big sign up saying you could bring in all manner of things that had been delivered to your home if you wanted to send them back to where they came from. Which must clog up the post office ridiculously, mustn't it?
Well, it must do. But then on the other hand, I mean, there was a queue snaking out of my post office yesterday. So I guess loads of people are still going there. But it was snaking out because they had, you know, 8 tills, but only 3 of them open.
Yep.
And then we're getting that time of year when you've got to, do your Christmas parcels. I mean, this is the other weird thing, is that use any courier service, it'll still be delivered next day or the day after.
Mm.
Yet our postal system, Christmas posting.
Yeah, better get it in by the end of November.
Yeah, it is bonkers. And then the other thing, of course, which has sort of disrupted all these things, is that if you buy on certain online supermarkets and shops, and this is where it is helpful, you can have it delivered pretty much anywhere in the world. So you can buy gifts for friends and relatives.
Yeah.
You do it in good time. You can set the date that it's done. They're trying to make things convenient. And I suppose what we have to remember is that with all the things that we all complain about, they don't do this and they don't do that and all the streets are busy, maybe some of the things that, because of the way we live our lives, it allows us to do other things. I mean, how many times, talking of delivery, how many times, particularly if you live in an urban area, have you thought, oh, I can't be bothered to go to the supermarket. Oh, I'll just check out a cheeky takeaway app and a couple of taps later. Delicious.
I know.
It's delivered. And you don't care that the fact that it's cost a little bit more, it's just saved you the bother of just, I don't know, ruining your kitchen.
No,
and
you're absolutely right. We've become a very lazy society, I'm afraid. But, you know, hey, that's the nature of the beast. James, thank you very much indeed. James Backs back tomorrow morning, of course, with the Talk Radio Business Breakfast. Don't miss it. You should never miss it. If you're up that time of the day, he's on before Julie Hartley Brewer, who takes over at 6:30. He's on at 5, of course.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil from the Farmer of Fury.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the Great Dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome back to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. It is a big day in the Independent Republic. Here in the UK, all the political parties have until 4 p.m. to select all their candidates for the election on December the 12th. Deals may be done. The Brexit Party may be doing something with the Tory Party. We don't know. We'll bring you all of that as it happens. Over in America, the Democrats will hold day 2 of their impeachment inquiry against President Donald Trump, which he has called a witch hunt, and the White House press secretary has called a colossal waste of taxpayer time and money. Today, we have a special guest to give his views of both that historic impeachment process in Washington and the election battleground here, which is starting to heat up. That man is the man who invented populist politics. He is the political strategist who is responsible for keeping Donald Trump in the race in 2016 when everyone else was urging him to quit. He was the chief executive officer of the Trump presidential campaign and chief strategist in the Trump White House. He's been called the great manipulator by Time magazine, who asked in 2017 if he was the second most powerful man in the world. That man is Steve Bannon, and he joins us right now on the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The times are very febrile here in London. The times are very febrile in Washington as well. It's now time to welcome Steve Bannon, former Trump strategist, the man who invented Donald Trump, the President of the United States of America. Steve, a very good morning and welcome to Talk Radio.
Mike, thank you very much. As President Trump says, I'm his top student. He was his architect. I was just proud to be part of the team that was surrounding him at the end when he won his great victory. But
well,
thank you so much for the kind words.
Well, listen, welcome to the most popular talk radio station in the country, because we are on a roll here, Steve, and we wanted to talk to you this morning because you are someone who understands what it is that's going on politically around the world. You're watching this impeachment process in Washington. I watched it yesterday afternoon, kind of open-mouthed, really, with some of the things that were being said, because there's so many different views on what is happening.
Well, it's actually quite stunning. You know, what we did here, my colleagues and I, particularly people that were involved in Brexit, Raheem Kassam and Jason Miller, who is the chief communications strategist for the 2016, we've actually set up a war room about 4 weeks ago. We have a war room with polling, surrogates, opposition research, rapid response, and we have a daily podcast radio show that's now being picked up nationwide throughout the country. So we follow this 24 hours a day. And actually are there to support President Trump in his efforts to avoid impeachment.
The thing that seems to be so baffling for us over here watching it is that the Republicans are completely dismissing it out of hand. Even the Republicans in the House, they're just saying this is a star chamber. The witnesses were being kind of cajoled by the Republican nominee. And then, of course, you get Adam Schiff, who's talking about terrible crimes being committed by the president, something that has to be dealt with. I mean, what's the truth of all of this?
Well, it's pretty stunning. Yesterday, you know, they had the opening salvo with Ambassador Taylor and Assistant Secretary Kent. And if you look at it objectively, we watched, you know, I think 8 hours of it and had rapid response going. It just seems to be a difference in policy. I mean, this is the difference in this is really driven by Brussels in the EU. This is the entire policy over the Ukraine, really going back to 2013, 2014. It's just a difference in policy. I mean, President Trump is a strong believer in America First, which is you want to have allies, you want to have people involved in these situations versus the kind of John McCain, Barack Obama, John Kerry, Hillary Clinton policy that was, you know, you want to force Ukraine into the EU and think about bringing them into NATO. What President Trump did here, and if you look at the logic that's presented by the Republicans, it's pretty straightforward. He wanted to make sure that American money was not going into a corrupt situation, and also to make sure that allies, particularly Germany and France and others, were going to put some money into the till here. And so it's pretty straightforward. The Democrats have really weaponized this and tried to criminalize it. They have the votes. I mean, this is the thing about our system over here in the House. Elections have consequences. They have the votes to actually impeach him. I mean, we've started a formal process. The reason, Mike, we set this war room up, we didn't believe the MAGA base. We didn't believe President Trump's base, and the establishment Republicans were taking this seriously enough. Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff are driving a process, which I think all the witnesses will all be called by next week, and they will vote to actually bring two articles of impeachment against President Trump sometime in mid to late December and vote to impeach him.
But in terms of the actual evidence against him, it appears to be very much third hand. It appears to be from whistleblowers who are not being named. And one of the things that astonished me yesterday was the kind of very throwaway comment that was made that President Putin was actually not willing to accept Ukraine being adopted by the European Union, putting the European Union right at the centre of this. And nobody's really picking up on that in the States.
This is the central part of it. I mean, this is why we hope, and our logic here at War Room Impeachment, which is this podcast and radio show, is to drive the message. We're finally going to have a debate on America First national security policy, which does not mean America as an isolationist country. What it means is that we want allies, which in the vital national security interests of the United States, for instance, in NATO or the Persian Gulf or the South China Sea or up in the Northwest Pacific, we're going to have, you know, allies. We're not an imperial power. And that's one of the things that the permanent political class of both the Republicans and the Democrats have kind of turned America into this imperial power where we have protectorates all over the world. We have a $1 trillion defense budget. And the deplorables, you know, my daughter's a West Point grad. She served in Iraq. I'm a naval officer that served in the Pacific and in the Persian Gulf. You know, the deplorable sons and daughters are the ones in the 38th parallel in Korea. They're on the ships in the South China Sea. They're or walk, you know, on patrol in the Hindu Kush and in Eastern Europe. And so what we want is allies. And that's what President Trump's trying to drive for. That's the basis of what this argument's about. I think yesterday, the stunning thing, Mike, if you watch it all day, the media is going crazy on this bombshell that was revealed. This was a phone call from a restaurant that had never been brought up before. I mean, it kind of beggars belief that a phone call that, you know, one ambassador heard by a staffer that they heard President Trump talking about this in a crowded restaurant would now be the big reveal after they've gone through weeks and weeks and weeks of this star chamber audition process in secret in a secure classified space below our Capitol. That would come up yesterday, and the mainstream media would treat this as some big reveal when the individual is not even going to be brought in to be deposed until sometime later. It shows you that Democrats will change any rule. They'll use the opposition party media to kind of drive any narrative on President Trump. So this is going to come down to power politics. This is going to come down to who actually has the votes in the House of Representatives. And right now, the Democrats do have the majority.
And is this a kind of establishment revenge on Donald Trump? Because he and you and the team together in the White House basically put your finger on what was wrong with American foreign policy, that the people of the United States of America didn't want it to be. They didn't want boots on the ground in Afghanistan. They didn't want more boys and girls coming home in body bags. They actually wanted the questions asked that Donald Trump asked, which was, what is the point of being in Afghanistan? And so now that whole Barack Obama and Bill Clinton kind of narrative, if you like, had changed forever.
Mike, this it's even deeper than that. This is about managed decline. And this is why Brexit in 2016 are inextricably linked. You know, we covered Brexit. You know, I set up Breitbart London, covered it extensively. In fact, Raheem Kassam, who is now one of our leaders here in the war room following this in the United States, was actually my managing editor at Breitbart. At the time, he had been a right-hand man of Nigel Farage. We had followed this kind of populist revolt in the United Kingdom for years. It really was set the precedent for President Trump, and that's all we knew when Brexit happened, that you really had this populist momentum in the United States that could win there. So Brexit in 2016 have always been inextricably linked, and they've moved kind of in the same pattern. You know, it shouldn't be lost on your audience that on Halloween, on, you know, 3 years after you guys voted for it, on the same day that Nancy Pelosi brought the formal charges for the formal inquiry into Trump's impeachment, was the day that you did not leave the European Union and essentially new elections were called. These two things are about managed decline. And you can see right now, it's very ironic that you're going to have a national election on the 12th of December, which will be within a few days of when they bring the formal charges against President Trump and the Democratic House tries to vote it. So these two efforts, and this is the established order, and it's joint party. You can see in the United Kingdom where some of the more traditional Tory parties kind of sided with, we don't want to leave Europe. That's what's happened in the United States. A lot of this has been the foreign policy of the permanent political class in the United States, whether they were Republican or Democrat, normally driven by the needs of the City of London or Wall Street and the global corporatists. And so that's why this is a battle that I think is a joint battle, and you kind of see parallels in it.
And as if by magic, Hillary Clinton showed up in London promoting a new book about powerful women, which bizarrely didn't include Margaret Thatcher. And she's been telling everyone, well, you know what? There's still time to save the relationship with the European Union. Donald Tusk comes out this morning and says, you know, there's still time to stop Brexit. There are still people who are wanting this not to happen.
If you think, and I said this back in 16, if people in the United Kingdom and people in the United States, if the deplorables think that just winning one election, they're going to sit there and say, what a fantastic idea, we're just going to toss you the keys and go for it, you're sadly mistaken. This is going to be a long-term process. It took as many, many, many decades to get in this situation. It's going to take as many decades to get out. It's not going to be any one election. You're going to have to put your shoulder to the wheel. You're going to have to work, and you're going to have to mobilize. I mean, look, we won in 2016 in the United States essentially by 79,000 votes in five counties and three states. Okay, we lost the midterm elections in 18, and that's why they're impeaching Donald Trump, because elections have consequences. We have to mobilize people for this impeachment effort right now to make sure President Trump is not removed from office. In addition, then we have to take that momentum and win in 2020, just like in the United Kingdom, you're going to have to win on December 12th. This is, you know, every time I give a talk to the deplorables, it's that, hey, the Hillary Clintons of the world have been in power for decades, and they're not going to give it up. I mean, she is now thinking, the reason she's in the United Kingdom on this book tour is she's now trying to generate interest among her donors for her to actually enter the presidential race after Mike Bloomberg entered last week to really run against President Trump.
Right, it's a fascinating situation. What do you make of Nigel Farage's campaign so far? What do you make of the deal? He called it a unilateral deal that he did with Boris Johnson to stand down some Brexit candidates in order to help the Tories win.
Well, I think people have to really look at what the deal is and what you really want to try to accomplish in leaving the European Union. I think what Nigel, at least the math I look at, you're talking about a potential 100-seat majority that could really give the Tories and some sort of combination of some of the other smaller parties like Brexit and DUP a real governing majority, not just to leave the European Union, but to deal with immigration and to deal with a whole host of issues to really revitalize the economy and to really take the United Kingdom to the next level, which I think is all out there in front of it. It seems to me, when you look at it, anytime you can get that type of majority, particularly in today's politics, where you really need to mobilize, and it always helps to have a majority. If you just look at the math, and I think what I've seen is Nigel's talking about a 40-seat, they would contest 40 seats in these labor districts, that maybe the Tories couldn't be too competitive. It has a certain internal logic to it. Now, obviously, you have, when you have these different parties, they have people inside the parties that are sometimes more loyal to the party than to the overall what we're trying to accomplish. I know today, I guess it's 4 o'clock in London is the deadline, and hopefully, you know, you have leaders like Boris Johnson and Nigel Farage who are very sophisticated, very savvy about this. You know, hopefully this thing will get worked out today.
And what about Jeremy Corbyn's role in all of this? Because he's not really an establishment figure. Many people in the Labour Party say that they would prefer to have a different leader, but his followers are very much like the kind of followers you like. They're the kind of people who are quite sort of, you know, driven by the ideology, driven by what he wants to do to change Britain.
Well, listen, there's two, you know, populism, and you see this in the United States in the campaign that looks like it's evolving in 2020. You know, populism is here. When you look in continental Europe, or you look in South America, you look in the United States. But it's a difference between populism on the right and populism on the left. Remember, one of the cornerstones of Trump's populist movement is what we call deconstruction of the administrative state. We're trying to get the state out of people's lives, right? It should be there for trade deals. It should be there for the necessities of government. It should be there to try to make things better. But this overweening nanny state is what holds back the entrepreneurial spirit and what holds back the potential to really have growth and to spread prosperity down to middle class and working class people, which is so essential. On the left, you see this, whether it's in Bernie Sanders or now Elizabeth Warren and Jeremy Corbyn, it's just more state intervention. And look, I come from a working class family in the United States. My dad was basically with the phone company for 50 years. And you know, we were Democrats for many, many decades. In fact, the vast majority of my family are kind of Irish Catholic, working class Democrats. But we're a big believer in that, you know, get the state out of the way so the entrepreneurial spirit can be there and try to drive growth. So people like Corbyn, I equate to almost a Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. The thing I think is dangerous is that you've seen this kind of what I call cultural Marxism come into the situation, which really I think is very much anti the underlying themes of the Judeo-Christian West and our values. And so that's why these fights now that are between populists are so important for populists on the right to continue to win these elections and continue to mobilize.
Because the language that people use is becoming very important in this country now. People are being criticized for using certain words. If you come from one side of the political spectrum, they like to control what you say. I won't have any of that, but that is a big, big problem now in this country.
Yeah, listen, political correctness is the way they try to limit speech and try to limit debate. Look, I'm a huge believer in democracy. Look, we won in 16, and I have done nothing but give accolades to the left who really mobilized and worked like the Tea Party worked in 2010. In 2010, we had the beginnings of this populist revolt by working class people on the right, where we won 62 seats in the House of Representatives in our Congress, which is the biggest since the Great Depression. The left really did the same effort, although they had the backing of George Soros and Mike Bloomberg. They had more money than we had, but it was about mobilization, going door to door. And in today's digital politics in the United States, still what's most powerful is going to a door, knocking on a door, and talking to people about your candidates. In 2018, the midterms, the left did that. And here's the reason, Mike. They believe something the Republican establishment doesn't believe. They believe that Donald Trump is a transformative figure and historic president. And they will do anything. They will knock on any door. They will do anything they have to do, work 24 hours a day to remove him from office, because they understand with his work on putting federal judges into the judiciary, in the deconstruction administrative state, that he's going to be in their personal lives 10, 20, 30 years from now. And so they will do anything to try to remove them from office. I don't agree with their ideology, but I admire their work ethic. And that's why I keep telling people on our side, if you want to win, you can't sit there and whine. You can't sit there and say, oh, my gosh, you've got to put your shoulder to the wheel. If you put your shoulder to the wheel and you work this every day and dedicate part of your life to this, good things are going to happen. You're going to have victory, but you're going to have to get engaged. You're going to have to get engaged emotionally, and you're going to have to get engaged not just by writing checks and giving donations. You're going to have to get engaged by your personal time to make sure that you save your country.
I was reading Bob Woodward's book, Fear, which you figure in quite a large part, Steve, and he was saying that basically it was you, more or less in 2016, who alone convinced Donald Trump to stay in the race after the Access Hollywood tapes came out with that famous phrase that we can't repeat on the radio. But basically, if it wasn't for you, he might not even have continued with the campaign.
Well, that was a very dark day, and I take pride in the fact President Trump's a fighter. He would have never quit. But people can't believe the pressure that came from the Republican establishment for him to step down that weekend. And look, he was never going to quit. He's not a quitter. In fact, he's a closer. And that happened, I think, with 3 or 4 weeks to go in the campaign. It got us refocused. He then went on a barnstorming tour in the upper Midwest, Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Iowa. And we turned those Democratic states into Republican victories. You know, Donald Trump is the best politician we've had since Ronald Reagan. And he really brought his message, which is he speaks in a very plain, straightforward vernacular. It's not this political mumbo-jumbo that both Republicans and certainly Democrats have been speaking. And so if you get Trump on a stage and let him make his case directly to the American people, people understood this is about managed decline, and they didn't want to see American decline. They wanted to see America, you know, return America to a form of greatness, and that's why they voted for Trump. But there were very dark days, and the Republican establishment, you see this right now, even in this fight, they tolerate Trump. They don't really support him. The established order in the Republican Party have never been a fan of Trump's policies towards China or Trump's policies towards immigration, his efforts to build the wall, and particularly about getting out of these endless foreign wars, not backing out of our alliances, but reinforcing our alliances to be real allies and not to have these countries as protectorates. And this is a huge battle in the United States right now. It's what's driving this impeachment process.
And can he survive this impeachment process? And just on a personal note, Steve, what's your relationship with Donald Trump like now?
Well, I think, look, he said the other day, I'm his number one student, and he loves working with me. So, but I've kept the arm's distance from the White House. And the reason is I want some independence to do this the way I think it has to be done. And I think people will tell you I'm the number one supporter of the president throughout the country. I have this organization that does nothing but push his ideas and his philosophies every day. And it's given us the independence to set this war room up and really galvanize the Trump movement to help support him. He's got a full-time job, as you saw yesterday when he had the president of Turkey at the White House. And so our efforts here is to support the president. But people have to realize this, and this is only now being grasped by his followers here. The way our system works, Nancy Pelosi has the votes to bring 2 articles of impeachment and actually to formally impeach him, not remove him from office, but to actually pass it to the Senate for a trial. And right now, she's on a path to do that. And you saw yesterday, I believe this thing opened as a huge flop to the Democrats. But last night, they're just sitting there and go, we got it. They're going to drive this very quickly to have these hearings in the next 2 or 3 weeks. And to then bring charges on him around the same time you will vote in the United Kingdom, around December 12th to 15th, then debate it, and then I think bring 2 articles to vote to impeach him sometime before Christmas, pass that over to the United States Senate for a trial, and that trial will take place in January, and maybe I think in right up by the time of the Iowa caucuses to kick off the 2020 year to try to hurt President Trump. They will not remove him from office. What they hope to do is damage him enough that he will lose in 2020. And so this thing's full on. But I got to tell you right now, for people following this in the United Kingdom, this shows you the importance of winning elections. Right now, President Trump, through no facts, is going to get impeached by the Democrats simply for the fact that we lost the 2018 elections in the House of Representatives.
It's going to be an incredible fight. I can see why you're calling your podcast The War Room. One final question, Steve. A lot of my mates in the media are asking me if you're going to buy the Daily Telegraph.
Well, if the Daily Telegraph is actually for sale, people should understand. I think the Daily Telegraph is one of the great untapped brands in the world. It's a fantastic paper. I think it could speak to a global audience of populism and economic nationalism throughout the world in many, many countries. I've had the honor to go around and to work with a lot of these leaders. I think the Telegraph's a brand. The reality is owned by some very sophisticated, smart people. And it's about really what their intents, because I think the media may be misrepresenting sometimes their actual how eager they are to sell this. But yes, it would be something that, you know, I've had a pretty good run in media so far. I've had a lot of media opportunities presented to me that I've turned down. But if the possibility is there, we will certainly take a look at it, because it's a great untapped brand, not just in the United Kingdom, but throughout the world. That brand, I think, really speaks to conservative values. And there's a burgeoning market of conservative values throughout the world. So if it's a possibility, you know, from my Goldman Sachs and investing days, I've done a lot of work in media, put a lot of money to work in media, and had a pretty good run at it. So we'd love to take a look if it's actually for sale.
Okay, Steve, thank you very much indeed. Steve Bannon calling us from Washington, D.C., of course, where the second part of the Trump impeachment hearing will take place later on today. What did you make of what Steve Bannon had to say? He's talking about fighting the good fight. He's talking about conservatism spreading around the world. He's talking about Trump and Brexit being in the same sentence politically around the world.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
If you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.